This episode is sponsored by Clairol Natural Instincts. If you're thinking about trying a new look, then give this semi-permanent hair colour a go at home. It only takes 20 minutes.
Which isn't just a gift to busy mums like us, Wend, but as someone who had only ever used semi-permanent colour on their hair.
Hang on, why?
Well, fewer root issues and it's kinder to your hair overall. So, yeah, I'm definitely going to give this one a whirl. It lasts for 28 washes, apparently.
No way. You can tell me more about it later. Now, on with the podcast.
You're listening to Sweat, Snot and Tears, brought to you by NetMums. I'm Annie O'Leary.
And I'm Wendy Gollidge. And together we talk about all of this week's sweaty, snotty and tearful parenting moments.
With guests who are far more interesting than we are. Hello, sweaty, snotty, teary lot. Welcome to another delightful episode with another fabulous guest. Now, before we introduce today's guest, I bring big news. Wendy, we're going weekday vegetarian in our house.
Oh.
I can feel, so 7-year-old has started to talk about veganism, which brings me out in a bit of a rash. I'm just not prepared to go that far. They're both little eco warriors. And so I think if I say yes to going Monday to Thursday veggie, I can hold off the veganism for a bit longer. What do you think? Do you think I'm mad?
I think you're actually very sensible. We have done the same in our house.
Have
it's
you?
It's a back to school thing.
Okay, give me tips, give me tips.
Well, no, mine's a ploy because Chloe wants to go vegetarian, but I've told her that she's only allowed to go vegetarian if she eats a vegetable. So it's a trick to get her to eat some vegetables, you see.
And how's it going so far?
We're only on day two.
Oh,
ask okay. me in a week.
Okay, all right. Well, the reason I bring it up is because I think today's guest might be the ideal person to hold our hands through this funny new phase that we're both in. She's the creator of no less than 37 cookbooks. I think the new one might make it 38. And is essentially responsible for the fact that we all care about our kids' diets these days. Please welcome parenting legend in her own lifetime, Annabelle Carmel. Welcome, aww. Annabelle.
So lovely to be with you. I mean, have you heard of veggie-hating vegetarians? Because there's quite a lot of kids that don't eat vegetables but are vegetarian.
Well, it sounds like Wendy's household.
So don't think this is the easy answer to get them eating their veggies, because it's not.
So what can we do? What's the answer? Should we be spending more days a week eating no meat or not?
I think it's good to be flexitarian.
Okay.
The thing about meat and chicken and eggs and things like that are they are such a good source of iron, and the commonest nutritional deficiency in children is iron deficiency. But if you want to be vegetarian, you just need to know that you have to have vitamin C at the same meal as something that contains a vegetable source of iron like spinach or porridge, and that if you don't have the vitamin C, it's really hard to absorb it. So you might be thinking you're giving them loads of veggies with iron in it, but you're not. So you just need to know that little tip. It's really important.
That is a really good tip. So what would be a good rich source of vitamin C alongside an irony thing then?
Any like berry
fruits. Technical terms there.
Berry fruits, strawberries, blueberries, irony things being whole grain porridge. I mean, any like whole grain cereal, iron fortified cereals, spinach, dark green leafy vegetables, broccoli, red pepper's good. That contains vitamin C. So yeah, there's loads of ways of doing it. It's just not quite as easy as eating meat, which is on its own a great source of iron and easy to absorb.
Well, that's why I'm thinking of not doing it every day and trying to get a bit of balance. Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm a huge animal lover, as you noticed at the beginning.
As we can tell from the dogs.
Four dogs barking. And I eat a lot of vegetarian food and I make lots of vegetarian recipes. But because I'm in the food business and I have to cater for everybody, I can't really turn vegetarian because we make things like cottage pie and chicken tikka masala in our meals. So, you know, I wouldn't be able to try it and that wouldn't be very good, would
well,
it?
Yeah, and your kids' chicken curry might be the most popular food in my house. So,
oh,
yeah,
that's good to know.
We can't give it up altogether.
Well, I remember, Annabelle, going back to when my now almost 10-year-old was almost one and we'd started the weaning journey and I was there with all of your books and I was reading. And in one of the basically, you said something about if you can get your child to eat some sort of fish, you're winning because it's so good for them. And I was there trying to give her all of this fish and she was like, no, you can just get bent. That's not happening. She literally didn't eat anything apart from cucumber for a year. And I was just like, so I remember sitting there with all of your books in front of me thinking, I'm failing. I can't
well,
do it.
I am on a mission to get kids to eat more fish. And I've actually teamed up with Young's. So Young's make the best fish. And we've just bringing out at the end of this month Young's and Annabelle Carmel fish pie, and also something called fish and chips, which actually isn't fish and chips, it's fish shapes and chip shapes, but they're both fish. So, but they're
really
delicious.
Clever.
And this fish pie is amazing, and it contains two of the children's five a day in it as well. So yeah, it's great. And you know, I think kids are very important, that especially they eat salmon, because that is the only good source of omega-3s, and they should be having omega-3s like twice a week. It's really important. So you can just bung this fish pie in the microwave, and there you are, job done.
This we like. Yeah, we like it when it can go in the microwave without guilt. That suits
yeah,
me.
True. Exactly.
Weirdly, I can get my kids to eat fish more than I can get them to eat a lot of other things. Kids are just weird, aren't they? Why are kids so unpredictable, Annabelle?
No, not too big a question for
no,
her.
No, in
there.
Their tastes, I mean. I mean, you just can't predict from one day to the next what's going to go down well and what's not.
Also, they can like something one week and the next week they won't
exactly.
touch it. I think it's because when we find something they like, we overdo it because we're so excited that they'll eat something. So we give it to them over and over again. Yeah, they don't
three
want
meals
ever see it
a day.
Again. Exactly. So I think the thing is, it's all about variety and trying new things. And I found out with my kids that they like things like curries, and quesadillas do really well. Anything in a wrap is like really popular. Satay chicken. And not to get into a rut like it's only chicken nuggets and pizza and burgers. Because the more you give those things, because you know your children will eat them, the more extremely fussy they become. So I in my new cookbook, I've like tried to introduce lots of different foods from around the world so that kids will, you know, they won't be antisocial when they go to a restaurant. They'll be able to eat other things. We've got paella, you know, we've got lots of things that are delicious for adults, but made in a child-friendly way. Why shouldn't they eat all these foods?
Exactly.
I mean, my kids like sushi. It's their favourite thing. So many
kids
like sushi.
One of mine is obsessed with, wait for it, smoked eel.
That is quite weird.
It's weird.
That is quite weird.
He will eat eels, they come out of his ears. Long story to do with my family being from Northern Ireland and Northern Ireland being the place where you get the best eels. But anyway, but he won't eat potato.
No, same in our house.
Why?
She'll eat olives and calamari, but she won't touch a roast potato.
But potatoes aren't, they don't even count as one of your five a day. So actually, they're not very good for you. So if you're going to have a potato, you should give a sweet potato. The interesting thing is that the goodness in these vegetables comes from the pigment and the colour. Because sweet potato is orange, it contains vitamin A. So if you get something like blueberries, they're full of antioxidants because they're that dark blue colour. And if you're going to give a melon, give like a red melon or an orange melon, but don't give the white melon. So the colour is really important. And the more different colours children are eating, the more different things they're getting. It's like
so
eating a rainbow.
So we should just give up on the potatoes, Wend?
Don't worry about the potatoes.
Yeah, but Chloe ate beige foods for like 4 years. It was all
she
eat.
You can mix. So in my fish pie, I've mixed carrot, sweet potato and potato in the topping. That's how it gets two of your five a day in it.
Oh, yes. Like so the whole hidden veg sauce shenanigans.
Yeah, that works really, really well. Or like my tomato sauce with six veggies hidden in it, or my bolognese sauce with six veggies. I mean, if that's the only way you can get them to eat your veggies, then that's fine. But eventually you do want them to eat things like broccoli, trees. But they tend to like things like that. My kids love broccoli. They like cauliflower when I roast it in the oven. And they like courgette, which looks like spaghetti, but it's actually courgettes. And then they like raw veg, like carrots with a dip.
So how old are your kids now, Annabelle?
Oh my God, they're old now. So my youngest is 29.
Well, I flipping hope they like their broccoli at 29.
But they were all very fussy when they were little.
Were
so
they?
Got good training.
So how was it being Mrs. Annabelle Carmel, food guru of the universe, and then having four little fussy eaters trailing after you?
But that's why I did it, because I'd lost my first child.
Well,
my
yes.
second child was the world's worst eater. And luckily, I was blessed with this terrible child who wouldn't eat. Well, I wouldn't have my career, let's be honest about it. And eventually, I got him to eat by trying lots of different things. And then I was running a playgroup with like 100 mothers, and I was giving them out my recipes, and they said to me, you know, you should write a book about feeding children. And at that stage, I couldn't even type or do anything. I was a musician. But because I'd lost Natasha, I was not in a very good place. And actually, it was really cathartic and a kind of a legacy to write that book and spend 2.5 years, like, putting something back and trying to give children better quality lives. And it was, like, dedicated to Natasha, because it's kind of gave some meaning to why she was born.
I was going to bring Natasha up, actually, because a lot of people might not know that she died at... Was she 3 months old?
She's 3 months old, but she's born healthy.
I know, it's just beyond...
It was
I can't
a
even
horrible
imagine.
Thing. And I've talked about this quite a lot on my social media, that someone kissed her who had a cold sore, and that then became encephalitis, which then caused her brain to swell. And it's really important, like when you have a new baby, like, you know, don't pass your baby around, get people kissing your baby when they're really young. I mean, it's a freak. It's like not going to happen very often, but that one time it can happen, you can avoid it. But I didn't know anything about this. I had no idea. I mean, I was like 25 years old, and losing a child is like, it was terrible. I was like in such a bad place. And it'd taken me 2 years to get pregnant, so losing her was devastating.
Oh, it must have been so horrible.
It's not something that ever leaves you, does it?
I mean, but it wasn't the end of it, because then I rang my doctor when I was in labour with my second child. He told me that was very early stages, and I ended up giving birth on the staircase because he told me to stay at home, and half an hour later I tried to get a hold of him. I couldn't get a hold of him. I went upstairs and I gave birth, and I shouted to my husband, "Oh, I'm giving birth," and he's like, "Don't be stupid." Came up, the head was out already.
Annabelle.
It was horrific. I thought I was going to lose my second child, but then no one came for 2.5 hours.
So what did you do? Ambulance. What did you do?
I couldn't do anything. I was stuck on the floor. I was like, the cord was still attached. So I attached the baby by the cord for 2 hours.
Sat on the top of the stairs.
But wait, I need details. Did the placenta come out?
No. It didn't, because they give you an injection.
Yes, they do, to make you expel it.
So it could take hours to get the placenta to come out. So I thought something was wrong.
So did you just wrap the baby in a blanket? Or what did you do?
Yeah, I tried to wrap it, but I couldn't really get the baby up really close because I thought I was going to snap the cord. God, we didn't know what we were doing, to be honest. But thank God, he was all right. He was fine.
Oh my word.
You know, having him was like wonderful, having another child and be able to build a future. So he was very, very wanted.
And so then how did the... What's the connection, do you think, between losing Natasha and starting this new career writing about children's nutrition?
Because I knew that I wanted to work with children after losing Natasha. That was something that I wanted to do. But he was a catalyst, being a bad eater, and then getting him to eat, because I love to cook, and finding ways to get him to eat new things, and then sharing them with all the mums in the playgroup that I was running, and then sharing with a wider audience, with The Complete Baby and Toddler Meal Planner, which is the first book I ever wrote. And this year...
The classic.
Year was the 30th anniversary edition of the book, so I've updated it. It's 30 years since I wrote that book. Unbelievably, 30 years.
That's nuts.
And it's still my best-selling book of all time.
Yeah, I don't think there's a house that doesn't have a copy, is there?
It's a fabulous book. The recipes are amazing.
Well, when I gave birth to mine, my step... mother-in-law gave me her copy, so she'd used it for my sister-in-law,
really nice.
Who are now 23 and 21. So I had a copy that was one of the, you know, originals, because it just gets passed around.
Well, you have to keep it and give it to Chloe and Grace now. You have to make sure it's...
Yeah, I'm
like
looking forward
thing.
To when they have kids who don't
the
eat.
Only thing is, the only thing is that a lot of the advice has changed.
Okay.
There's a lot more finger food recipes. So actually, you really do need to get the new version, which has the updated advice. And also lots of finger food recipes and things like peanut butter. You know, we now give it very early on and how to give it.
So do you have to update your books quite a lot then as advice changes?
Yeah, I do it every few years. I update the books and it gets bigger and bigger. It gets more recipes in it, more photos in it. And I take out some recipes, put new ones in. And it's always like all the latest advice in the book. So I love doing that.
Was any one of your four a worse eater than the other? Like, is there one who wears the crown of fussiest eater of
Nick,
the century?
My first child was literally the world's worst eater.
And what would he eat and what wouldn't he eat?
Pasta and fruit. That was it. Nothing else. Unbelievably terrible. He wouldn't
I think a lot of our users will be very reassured to hear this, won't they?
But now, oh my God, he eats so much food. It's like not normal. He had COVID really bad at Christmas.
Oh.
And he moved in with me and I looked after him. And he gave up his house, which he was renting. And he hasn't moved out. He's still here 8.5 months later because of the food and one of his favourite recipes.
I can't say I blame him. I'd be there too.
And he has his laundry done. He loves it. And his favourite recipe is my mini minute steaks with caramelised onion from the Complete Baby and Toddler Meal Planner.
Oh, I think I would like a plate of that right
it's,
now.
It's amazing. I mean, he loves it. I make it every Sunday for him. And I love having it with me, so I'm making lots of food all
the
time.
To keep him.
Yeah, to keep him. Yeah.
So, Annabelle. Oh, yes. Sorry, Annie.
Oh, no, go on. I was just going to say, so we know that fussy eater children drive millions of parents to Net Mums every month in search of some answers. If you could give any tips to parents of fussy eaters today, what would you say?
Well, I would try and get them to cook with you in the kitchen. That's why I've written my latest book, which is called The Fun, Fast and Easy Cookbook, which is all about cooking food with kids, or older kids can cook it themselves. So things like burgers, spaghetti bolognese, chicken curry, and kids love to cook. And I got my kids to cook when they were 4, 5, and 7 on a Friday, and they would make supper for the whole family. I mean, it was chaos in the kitchen. I do, you know, it is a mess, unfortunately. But they all learned to cook really well, and they loved it. And they're learning maths, time, measuring, and being part of the adult world is what they absolutely love. So cooking is a
they want
really
to be
important
grown
life
ups,
skill.
Don't they?
And if you don't cook yourself at home, there isn't that much time at school where they learn to cook.
No.
And they don't usually get involved in like proper cooking. And I think it's really important that we teach them about the dangers in the kitchen. A kettle's still hot when you turn it off. How to use a sharp knife. Otherwise, how can you cook? And all these things that we need to teach them. And I think children, you know, need to learn independence, and preparing delicious, healthy food will set them up for life to have a good eating
habits.
But
what about the tinies? What about the 7-month-old who, like, still won't put anything food-like in their mouth? What do you do?
Well, I put everything into a food processor. Like, I make salmon and quinoa balls, chicken apple balls. I make, like, carrot cake balls with no sugar. I whoosh it all up in a food processor, and then I roll it into small balls so they can pick it up with their fingers. And they love that. It's that dainty, small piece of food that attracts them.
So it's about kind of making it fun and not making it too food-like.
They do like look at something. If they don't like the look of it, they'll say, I'm not eating it. They won't even try it.
That's the most demoralising bit, though. If you've spent half an hour whizzing up quinoa and salmon balls and making them look beautiful, and then you put them on the high chair and they look at it and they go, and they throw it away... Especially if you've got a dog who then eats your lovingly crafted salmon and quinoa ball. But that's the bit that I found so demoralising.
But they do eat it. That's the thing is, they do eat these small balls of food. They do pick them up. They love the size of them, and they want to be independent. They want to feed themselves. And I find that this way of cooking is the best way of cooking for a very fussy child. And my son, Nick, the world's worst eater, would not eat chicken. So I made these balls out of minced chicken thigh, onion, and thyme and breadcrumbs, a little bit of egg, and I made them into small balls. I baked them in the oven, and that was the first time he loved eating chicken, and I still make them. They're fantastic, and they're so easy, and you pop them in the freezer in a plastic box. You take out as many as you want, defrost them, heat them up in the microwave, and hey presto, you've got a great meal for your child.
So if the balls end up on the floor... The first time, keep going with the balls.
But I put a splash mat under the floor, under the high chair, so you can recycle them back again.
Not if you've got a greedy golden retriever, you can't.
The dog needs to be in the other room, Wen.
Yeah, the dog needs to be banished. A bit like your dogs, Annabelle, banished to the other room.
Yeah.
Now, back to colouring my hair again. I'm thinking about going darker. What do you think, Wend? And doing it myself with Clairol Natural Instincts. All I need to do is to decide which of the 18 shades to pick.
Totally agree. Spending hours in a hairdresser would be lovely, but it just never seems to happen.
Exactly, which is why I'm loving the sound of Clairol Natural Instincts. Their semi-permanent conditioning colour promises to give me shiny, swooshy hair in just 20 minutes.
And it contains coconut oil, and it contains aloe vera, so it feels very treat-like, and it even works on my crazy curly hair.
Exactly, no roots, just shininess and general fabulousness.
What's not to love?
Consider it a hair win. Now, on with the podcast.
So, what do you wish, if you could send your wisdom to all of the parents on our forum who are going, you'll only eat chicken nuggets, what do you wish parents knew about feeding their kids? What's your kind of mantra for parents?
There's so many things. I think starting from weaning is that if you're starting to wean later now at 6 months, the way we weaned previously was just fruit and vegetables for like 4 to 6 weeks. Mm. You can't do that if you start at 6 months, because from 6 months, and this is really important to know for anyone weaning, from 6 months, the iron that a baby inherits from their mother starts to run out. And neither breast milk or formula milk will give your baby the iron that they need. That's why one needs to introduce solids. But neither will fruit and vegetables. So you need to move on from your fruit and vegetables fairly swiftly and introduce iron-rich foods within that six-month period. It's really important. And the other really critical nutrient you need to be introducing at 6 months is essential fatty acids, which can really only get from oily fish. So those two things are really important early on. And babies actually need more fat and less fibre in their diet than we do. So this healthy eating guidance of low fat, high fibre is completely wrong for babies. And also, if you're vegetarian, an adult vegetarian diet, which is full of like fibre and brown rice and like high fibre cereals, is not a good diet for babies. So they would really need to have eggs and cheese in their diet, because what they need is they need what I call nutrient-dense foods to fuel their very rapid growth in the first year. So it's very important to realise that what's good for adults isn't necessarily the right way to feed a baby.
I think this is really interesting because I'm noticing that as kind of millennials who are becoming parents now are kind of known for their very vegan or veggie diets, as they become parents, they're really struggling because they want their babies to eat veggie or vegan. And yet, like you've just said, it's not really enough to sustain a baby nutritionally. What is the right thing to do if you're a vegan or vegetarian couple and you then have to start feeding your baby?
So vegetarian's okay, provided you have vitamin C with iron-rich foods to be able to absorb the iron, and provided you have eggs and cheese, because that's going to give your baby the calories that they need to grow. And remember not to give too much high fiber, because your baby can then feel full and not get the nutrients they need.
That's the point,
tiny,
isn't it?
Tiny tummies.
Yes, tiny weeny tummies.
So even Weetabix, which is quite high in fiber, can deplete their body of iron. So you have to remember that. So that's important.
That's really important. I didn't realise that.
But vegan is another thing. I mean, vegan I wouldn't recommend unless you give supplements, because it's going to be very hard to get enough essential fatty acids without a supplement, or probably to get enough B12 without a supplement. And maybe like go vegetarian with your baby, and then when your child is a little bit older, let them decide what they want to do. I mean, I support vegans and vegetarians, but I just worry in the very early years whether it's going to give them the nutrients that they need, because an adult vegan diet isn't going to be suitable for a baby.
I think it's really important that we remember that. Like, babies aren't just mini grown-ups, are they? They're their own little entities.
They're not. If they grew at the same rate that they grow in their first year, all the way through up until 18, they'd probably be as tall as Nelson's column. But they don't.
That's nuts.
Imagine. They don't. Their rate of growth slows down at the end of the first year, which is why they become more fussy. So they aren't eating as much because they don't need as much food. Their brain triples in size in the first year, which is why we need essential fatty acids, because that's a really important part of the brain formation and visual development. So fish is so important. That's why I've developed this fish range, because a lot of children aren't eating enough oily fish. Fish fingers tend to be white fish, but the oily fish is what they need. I mean, obviously they need white fish as well, but the oily fish is very important.
Yeah, we have Oily Fish Tuesday in our house to make sure
that's very good.
Yes. You're putting me to shame, Annie. Well, you can't have Oily Fish Tuesday, now you're having vegetarian Monday to Friday.
Well, I know,
you?
It's all just been thrown into complete disarray, Wendy. I don't know what I'm going to do.
I think you're going to have to be pescatarian, Annie.
Yeah, we're going to have to.
Yeah, I think that is a good idea, because I think, you know, flax seeds, walnuts, all these things that contain essential fatty acids. I mean, a baby can never eat enough of those to get the essential fatty acids they need. No. So how are they going to get it if they don't eat fish or have a supplement?
Right, the other trend that I'm noticing, Annabelle, which causes me great concern, and I actually have been known to stamp my feet a little bit in meetings with unnamed food brands for children, is when they start saying, and we're thinking of introducing a range of gluten-free baby this and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, why? Has there been a massive spike in celiac children? And they're like, no, but their parents don't really want them to
That's
eat
ridiculous.
Gluten. I'm like, what's going on? We need people to better understand the difference between giving up gluten through choice and actually being allergic to something, don't we?
Absolutely. I mean, the commonest allergies
and ditto with dairy. There's a lot of dairy.
I know. And like, dairy is such an important source of calcium.
I know.
And the dairy-free milks that you give, the formula milks, they don't taste as good. And they're, I don't know, unless you need to give dairy-free, don't. Get your child properly checked out. But a lot of people think their child has an allergy when they actually don't have an allergy. But interestingly enough, the earlier you give eggs and peanut butter, the more chance there is of your child not developing an allergy, which was completely opposite advice when I was a mum, and they told me not to give peanut butter till about 9 or 10 months. And now they know that by giving peanut butter early, it helps to develop some barrier to that allergy, especially in cases where your child has eczema under medical supervision. They even recommend giving it before 6 months, but obviously under medical supervision, because babies who are who have eczema, particularly severe eczema early on, are much more likely to develop a food allergy.
Yes. What about honey, Annabelle? Because when mine were little, yes, it was not before one.
That's the same. It's very
but
rare.
But that's because it's not pasteurised, right?
Yes, because in very rare cases, it can cause infant botulism. But I don't know that there's been any cases of infant botulism for a long time. But still, it's probably a good idea. But if you heat honey to a high degree, you kill off that infant botulism anyway. So you could cook with honey to a high temperature.
So what advice would you give to parents who make choices themselves about things like drinking milk with a Y, one of my pet hates, and not eating bread and stuff? Like, it's not okay to make that choice for your children unless they have an allergy, is it?
I think it's much more difficult to give a child a good rounded diet by excluding very important parts of their diet like dairy, because dairy is the best source of calcium and it's really important, and they're growing with their bones, and it's going to be much more difficult to get the calcium without including dairy. So I think it would be a shame, unless they really have to. But obviously, if a child has a cow's milk allergy, there are plenty of things that they can have. But the type of milks they have, the formula milks that are dairy-free, don't taste as good.
No, my daughter had to be on, I can't remember what it was called now, but it tasted revolting.
Neocate,
that's Neocate. It. It was...
It tasted
what does it
awesome.
Taste like? What does
it smelled like drains. It was it's horrible.
Seriously? Did she drink it?
She did, but she was on it from really, really young because she had cow's milk protein intolerance. And then once she was onto cow's milk itself at about one, she was fine.
But the other thing that's interesting, that with an egg allergy, before, when you had an egg allergy, you were told not to give biscuits, cakes or anything containing egg, like a meatball. Now, if you have an egg allergy and the child can't eat something like scrambled eggs or omelette, you should give them meatballs with a bit of egg in if they can tolerate it, or a biscuit with a bit of egg in it. Because by giving them these small amounts of egg, you're helping them eventually, hopefully, grow out of their allergy. That's why they have the milk ladder. It starts off with a biscuit with a little bit of dairy in it. Mm. And a lot of children who have a dairy intolerance or dairy allergy, they'll grow out of it.
Yes, that's what we found.
Yeah.
Now, we've talked a lot about the kind of the science and the practicalities of feeding fussy eaters or kids with allergies, or to be frank, kids without allergies. What about the emotional wrangling that happens in a mother or father's head when they've got a fussy eater or a child who genuinely can't eat something? How can we calm ourselves down and not make food a mealtime's battleground, Annabelle?
I think it's a psychological thing with many children, and provided you're making something that's tasty and looks nice, sometimes if they won't eat it, the best way to deal with it is say, fine, you're not hungry, and just let them go. Because forcing them to eat something, well, you can't anyway. And eventually, when they're hungry, they're going to be less fussy. That's the truth of it. A hungry child will eat something new. If you keep
that's
on giving
really
them...
really interesting, but very hard to do.
But it's the best way to get your child to eventually eat a healthy diet. If you keep on only giving them chicken nuggets or pizza, then they're going to be even more fussy because that's all they'll eat.
Well, yes, I have a friend who had famously the fussiest eater child ever, would never eat a meal, wouldn't eat anything. And yet, if you spent a day with them, they were eating more snacks than you could shake a stick at. So actually what was happening was...
they weren't hungry.
The kid was filling up with snacks, and then at mealtime was just like, I'm not hungry, I didn't need anything.
And to be honest, these bags of snacks for toddlers, there's nothing in them. I mean, there's nothing. They're like Wotsits, but without the salt. Like, what's the point?
So where do you stand on snacks?
Well, I think if you're going to make a snack, give them something like fruit, vegetables, like vegetables dipped in hummus, like cheese. I mean, give them something that's part of their overall nutrition. Why should a snack be empty calories? Why can't it be fruit, veg, cheese?
And what about being hungry, though? Does a child need a snack between a meal? What do we do?
I worry about this.
But
not so early. They probably don't need snacks until at least 9, 10 months old, to be honest, because they're having milk and everything. They don't need it. And you're filling them up, and then they don't want to eat their really good, nutritious meal. But think of snacks as being part of the overall nutrition. And if you can have a snack like a rice cake with peanut butter on it, that's a good snack. And they like that. But why buy these bag snacks? And you look on the back, it says carrot, but it's like 1% carrot. So give them a carrot. That's 100% carrot.
Why would you?
True, it is. That's a good tip. It's a good tip. I just swing wildly on snacks. Sometimes I'm like, yes, of course they need snacks. They mustn't go hungry. And then I'm like, but then, like you say, put a meal in front of them and they're like, oh, no, I'm not hungry.
Or have something in the fridge, like all ready to go, like cut up veggies or steamed or roasted sweet potato wedges or cut up pieces of cheese. They'll eat it. And go out with something like that.
The snack time I struggle with the most, I don't know about you, Wendy, is when they first come out of school. And they're ravenous.
But they don't want fruit. They won't. Yeah, they want something.
Yeah, an apple's not going to cut it, Annabelle.
Well, mate, give them a wrap. They love wraps. I make amazing wraps. I put like mayonnaise, a little bit of sweet chili sauce or some plum sauce, some chicken, some like cucumber. And I wrap it up into the wrap. And it's like a mini duck roll. And they love it. So wraps are really good.
Mine will always eat a wrap.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, wraps are, and you can make so many things in wraps. I mean, you can make tuna with sweet corn. You can make, you know, vegetarian wraps. You can make hummus with grated carrots. They love that. And cucumber. And you stick it into a wrap and then suddenly it becomes, well, that's a magical ingredient for child appeal because it's stuck in the wrap. Quesadillas are another one. I make this lovely chicken mixture with like sweet corn and red pepper and tomatoes and onion and chicken and a lovely sauce. And I stick it between two wraps with a little bit of grated cheese, and then I flip it over and I cut it into wedges. They go mad for it. My children absolutely love it. And it's only because I stick it inside the quesadillas. If the chicken was on the table, they wouldn't eat it.
If I offered Florence a cheese sandwich, she'd turn her nose up and say, no, I didn't like cheese sandwiches. Do a melted cheese between two soft tortillas. And she's like, oh, this is so amazing. This is so nice. Thank you, Mummy.
Yeah. So wraps are good. Quesadillas are good. You can do tomato pesto and mozzarella quesadilla. That's really nice as well. And they're so quick to make. Really quick.
So if you are going to give your kids something labelled naughty, as it were, what's the best naughty?
So I make these, they're like chocolate balls, but they're not really made of chocolate. They're made with dates and cocoa and cashew nuts and a bit of orange extract. And I put it all into a food processor and I whiz it up. It tastes like chocolate and it looks like chocolate. It looks like a truffle.
I'd quite like one of those now.
Yeah, the problem might be it might not make it to the kids, Annabelle.
This is also true. This is also true. I mean, with my son at home, like, he eats, like, for four people. It's not normal. I have to hide food so we have something left at our dinner sometimes. It's like, if he's going out early. Or I have to lie, like, have all the burgers gone? Yes, but no, they haven't really.
This is all coming to you, Annie. This is coming.
I know. My brother's a bit like that. My brother will, like, eat a whole chicken in one sitting and think that that's completely normal. Very strange behaviour. The male of the species is...
But how old are your kids now?
9 and 7.
And do they cook? Do you get them to cook in the kitchen?
Yeah, Florence in particular loves cooking and basically would cook anything if you let her. The boy child, not so much, is more of an eater than a cooker.
Well, I think if you got my new cookbook, the pictures are so enticing and the recipes are so yummy. In fact, some of them are my favourite recipes that I cook for the family, that they would get interested in cooking. And when they cook, they're more interested in eating it. It's almost like hurts their pride if they made something and they don't eat it.
Okay, well, I'm gonna put this to the test then, and I'll get the new book and give it to Atticus and see.
I'll send you a copy.
Whether he's inspired. Thank you so much. Now, we're getting to the end of the pod, and we have some regular questions that we always ask our guests at the end, Annabelle.
Ooh, this is a surprise. No one warned me about this. Okay. I hope they're not too difficult.
No, they're a mixture of thought-provoking and utterly banal.
Okay.
First of all, thought-provoking. How do you want your children to remember you, Annabelle? She's thinking, people.
I'm thinking about that. I want them to remember me as a friend and a mentor. And I think that I'm very blessed that my daughter works with me in my company and I see her every day in the office. And as a working mum, I had to give up quite a lot when they were little, but I always there at bedtime and always there for all the things that they did. And I think that they've seen me as a role model, and they've all got an amazing work ethic and they're going to start their own businesses, all of them. And I think that I've given them a gift of being, it's not what you do for your children, it's what you teach them to do for themselves. That's what I want to leave with them. And I've always made them do things for themselves. If they say, tie your shoelaces, I'll say, no, I'm not going to do that. I'll show you how to do it and then I'm going to untie it and I want you to do it. Because I don't believe in like giving stuff to kids too early. I think they need to earn it. And I brought all my kids up to be self-sufficient. And I think that's a gift that is really important, that parents need to give to their kids.
And not always easy to do either.
Because, but they're happier. They're happier.
No, you're completely right. It's just sometimes you're tempted to save the day, aren't you? And yeah, but you're right.
So what's next for Annabelle Carmel? Tell us. Book number 39?
Yep. Well, my Fun, Fast and Easy cookbook comes out on the 30th of September. And I'm launching a clothing range with Rachel Riley.
Annabelle!
Yeah, really exciting. And it's based on the illustrations from the Complete Baby and Toddler Meal Planner.
That's so cute.
Yeah, and it's really cute. And it's baby grows. And some of them you can actually have your child's name embroidered on them. And it's pajamas, it's muslins, it's baby grows, even baby grows where you can embroider your child's name on. So you can have, like, in case you forget their name or you've got twins or triplets. Very good for triplets.
Well, the next one is the most perfect question to ask.
Well, it's
you,
surely fairly obvious.
Well, we ask it of everyone, but it's particularly brilliant to put it to you. What's for tea tonight and who's cooking? I really hope it's you, Annabelle.
Oh, well, I'm cooking. I'm cooking. So I'm making my seared tuna salad. It's incredible. We literally lived on it in the pandemic and it's on my website. And I take fresh tuna and I cook it for literally 1 minute. That's it. And then I put like amazing salad dressing with lettuce, mouli, tomatoes. I buy these seeds that I sprinkle on it. It's the most delicious salad. And I'm also making my giant couscous salad with red onion dressing, which is fabulous. Also on my website. And then I'm making for dessert something that my mum taught me to make. It's called a Lokshen pudding. It's a really interesting thing. It's thin vermicelli, and you put egg and a little bit of milk with it, and you put raisins and sultanas in it, and you bake it in the oven. It's all crispy. It's to die for. It's incredible.
Do you have puddings every night in the Annabelle Carmel household?
I like to cook puddings. Not every night, though, but I do like to have a little bit of salt. I feel like you need something sweet at the end of a meal. I do. So what I did also, I bought these tiny cornettos, and they're like mini cornettos. But they're only this big, so you think you're not eating too much, but then you end up eating six of them. That's the problem.
I'm glad you are quite normal like the rest of us. When do you do pudding every night?
Not for the grown-ups, but the kids tend to have something like fruit and yogurt or something.
Okay. But I always have cookies, actually. I have oat and raisin cookies that are incredible, and they're healthy. And they're really easy to cook, and they're always on the table, and the kids love them. But they're actually got good things in them.
Okay, so I'm not a bad mum if I give something sweet after a meal.
I think a meal isn't complete with something tiny bit of sweet. I just feel I crave it.
But I don't want to train them to
be
like sugar
monsters. It could be fruit, though, but it could be fruit.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. You're making me feel better. Right, last question. Over to you, Wendell.
Annabelle, you have to imagine that your very grown-up, very hungry son is a baby again, and you're tucking him into bed and singing him your family lullaby. And we'd like you to sing it to us, please.
Oh, my God. That's terrible. I'm not sure I can do that.
Of course you can. You can do anything. You're Annabelle Carmel.
Indeed.
Can it be really short?
Yeah.
One line's
fine.
How much is that doggy in the window? The one with the waggly tail.
Woof,
how
woof.
Much is that doggy in the window? I wish that doggy was for sale. Oh,
you're
dog
the
lover.
First person to have sung that on this podcast, and it's one of my absolute favourites. So thank you very much, Annabelle Carmel.
Well, Annabelle, it has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining
us. It has, and long may our friendship continue, Annabelle.
Well, I love coming on your show. Thank you. I just want to say one thing, that it's one of the things that we do, and it's actually one of the things I did several years ago, but it's become really popular, is our app. We have over 300 recipes on our app, and it's amazing because you can keep it in your pocket.
Yeah.
And whenever you're in the supermarket or you're thinking about what to cook, it's just full of ideas.
Okay. Well, we will be downloading it today. Thank you so much, Annabelle.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye.